16 countries. As Margot van der Velden, WFP's Director of Emergencies, put it, "We are at a catastrophic turning point. This report is a clear call to urgent action," Dominic Bergen, FAO's Director of Emergencies and Resilience, said recently. "We are deeply concerned about the combined impact of several crises which are eroding people's ability to produce and access food, leaving more and more at risk of the most extreme hunger. We need access to these populations to ensure they have food and means to produce food and improve their livelihoods to prevent a worst-case scenario."
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life. Here on IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi. We were talking about anger and the limits of anger and how we should react towards anger, or if someone curses you or swears and uses foul language, how should we react? And we talked about how we should react. And I would, inshallah ta'ala, continue more in this program about how to react. For example, an eye for an eye is limited by divine decree. One can perform one of the following three actions to someone who swears at him. He can either forgive him or her and remain silent, or answer his bad language with good language. Or if he cannot do any of these, he can swear at the person just like the latter swore at him. For example, if someone called him stupid, he can reply, "You're the stupid one." But he does not have the right to say anything against his father, mother, or brother, or sister, and so on and so forth. He is not allowed to use foul language more than these kind of words, which are accepted in the social norms. For example, stupid, crazy. So there are limits of the words you can use. If that other person uses vulgar language, foul language, you're not allowed to use the same back. But when it comes to these words like stupid, crazy, these words are accepted. The Quran says, "Should anyone aggress against you, answer him in the manner he assail him in the manner he assailed you. One is unable to oppress the oppressor to a higher degree of oppression than he was oppressed himself. If one swears twice, responding to one swear, he has crossed the limits." So if you respond with two swears, then you have crossed the limit of what you were allowed to do. There is no eye for an eye regarding false accusations. The accused cannot claim that the accuser committed the crime that he says was committed. For example, the accused cannot accuse the accuser of committing adultery in return for a false accusation. That is another example of how we are not allowed to use the eye for an eye principle. When someone is accusing you for falsehood, for something you have not done, then you or we are not allowed to use false accusations against the other person when he or she has not done such a thing, or we do not have yaqeen, certainty, that he has done such a thing. We are not allowed to answer back with false accusation, even if we were accused of falsehood. what the accused can do is charge the accuser of making false accusations, and if it is confirmed, he will be punished according to the laws of that country. The danger here, and if that is not possible that he would be punished because of false accusation, know that Allah is the seer, the watcher, and he or she will be answerable on Judgment Day. The danger here is when one is losing control of one's tongue in the state of anger and saying more than one is allowed to say. So you say more than one is allowed to say, which results in becoming divinely responsible. You would be divinely responsible in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala when you say things that you shouldn't have said. But in any case, one may respond with bad language if it is not a false accusation, lie, or slander, and not outside the limits. One's tongue easily goes out of control, and the only thing there is to control it is the fear of Allah. Basically, the best thing you can do here, dear brothers and sisters, is to keep your silence. That is the ideal. The next step, which is even more ideal, is that you answer back with good language. The last or the lowest limit is that you answer bad language with bad language. If the person says that you're stupid, you say back that you are stupid yourself. But that is the lowest limit in this vertical line. If you imagine a vertical line, this would be the lowest limit. So the best one is to answer back with good language. Number two, to keep your silent. Number three, to answer back with the same words that that person used.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Another subtopic within this field is dignity and comfort in front of tribalism. Here we will mention a verse from Surah Al-Fath, when the faithless nourished bigotry in their hearts, the bigotry of pagan ignorance. Allah sent down His composure upon the Prophet and upon the faithful, and made them abide by the word of God wariness, piety, for they were the worthiest of it and deserved it. And Allah has knowledge of all things. The Arabs, dear brothers and sisters, in the age of ignorance, in addition to having satanic and animalistic anger, which we talked about in previous programs, were more racist and more tribalistic than other nations. According to a prophetic tradition, tribalism was the cause of their fall. Their tribalism made them arrogant, and because of it, they continued to accept the false slogans that their fellow tribesmen would say. If you did bad or good, the tribesmen should be behind you, in good and bad, in evil and the good. It did not matter at all what you did. The rule, the principle was that the tribesmen should be behind you. Or if you reached a position, the first thing you would do would put your family tribalism, which put your family in different positions. And we still see this mentality of tribalism in many, many Muslim countries. So either we have not been rid of this mentality yet. The unbelievers had this spirit of ignorant tribalism. Well, Allah gave His Prophet and those who followed Him peace and comfort so that they had dignity in front of the unbelievers. For example, the peace treaty of Hudaybiyah. This verse was specifically revealed about the peace treaty of Hudaybiyah, which has been mentioned in Islamic history. And the Messenger of Allah recited the peace treaty and the Commander of the Faithful wrote it down. The person who came as the ambassador of the Quraysh tribe said, "We do not know when they wrote in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful," on the top of the letter. This person X said, "We do not know the compassionate, the merciful. Nothing has reached us about this from our ancestors." Some Muslims complained and said that the sentence must remain as it was. But the Messenger of Allah said, "What should we write?" He asked the person. The person said, "Writing in your name, O Allah, is common amongst us." So the Prophet said, "Ali, erase what you wrote and write in your name, O Allah." This is not something so serious that one should fight over and ruin the peace treaty, which is in the benefit of Islam and the Muslims. And we can practice that in our daily life. We should not pick up fights where there is not worth anything. There is not worth of fighting for something trivial. And when you can compromise, do compromise, without compromising your deen, of course.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
Oh.
All I need to be all so I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me. Cause your love is all I need to be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me. Cause your love is all I need to be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has predicted there will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. On a day when world leaders offered their congratulations to the president-elect, Joe Biden. Mike Pompeo made his remarks to reporters at the State Department on Tuesday, 10th of November, and gave a slight smile after referring to a second Trump administration, leaving it unclear whether he was joking. The Secretary of State made no reference whatsoever to Joe Biden winning the U.S. election on 3rd of November when making remarks to reporters at the U.S. State Department. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Julian Borger. The piece is titled, "Pompeo Makes Baseless Claims About Smooth Transition to Second Trump Administration." Stay with us for more of Julian Borger's article. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has predicted there will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration on a day when world leaders offered their congratulations to the president-elect, Joe Biden. Mike Pompeo made his remarks to reporters at the State Department on Tuesday, 10th of November, and gave a slight smile after referring to a second Trump administration, leaving it unclear as to whether he was joking. He did not refer to the fact that Joe Biden has been projected as the winner of the election and held a lead of more than 5 million nationwide in the vote count so far, whilst being ahead in the four critical battleground states. Pressed on the subject in a later radio interview, Mike Pompeo did acknowledge at least the possibility of a Democratic victory, saying, "On 20th of January, we'll have a transition, whether it's to a Trump administration, a second Trump administration, as I spoke about today, or to an administration led by former Vice President Joe Biden." In his State Department remarks, Mike Pompeo focused on the various legal challenges being pursued by the Trump administration, none of which so far have been found to have any legal merit. "We're ready," Pompeo went out. "The world is watching what's taking place. We're going to count all the votes. When the process is complete, there will be electors selected. There's a process. The Constitution lays it out pretty clearly. The world should have every confidence that the transition necessary to make sure that the State Department is functional today, successful today, and successful with a president who's in office on 20th of January, a minute after noon, will also be successful." The U.S. State Department is not currently communicating with the Biden team, and all government agencies have been told to proceed with their budgets as if Donald Trump had been re-elected to office, to the outrage of Democrats. Secretary of State Pompeo shouldn't play along with baseless and dangerous attacks on the legitimacy of last week's election, said Elliot Engel, a Democratic chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. The State Department should now begin preparing for President-elect Biden's transition. Mike Pompeo said he was receiving calls from all across the world, but did not say from whom. The leaders of America's main allies, including Canada, Britain, France, Ireland, and Germany, have all congratulated Joe Biden in phone calls on Monday and Tuesday. "They understand that we have a legal process. They understand that this takes time," the Secretary of State said, comparing the situation now to the 2000 presidential election. Back in 2000, George W. Bush was leading by 537 votes in Florida when the Supreme Court intervened to stop the vote counting. Joe Biden is ahead by tens of thousands of votes in four critical states now. Echoing Donald Trump's line, which has become the Republican Party's line, Mike Pompeo said, "We must count every legal vote. We want to make sure that any vote that wasn't lawful ought not to be counted. That dilutes your vote. If it's done properly, got to get that right. When we get it right, we'll get it right. We're in good shape." When a journalist asked whether Donald Trump's refusal to concede discredits U.S. promotion of democratic norms abroad, Mike Pompeo replied irritably, "That's ridiculous, and you know it's ridiculous, and you've asked it because it's ridiculous." He added, "We want the law to be imposed in a way that reflects the reality of what took place, and that's what I think we're engaged in here in the United States, and it's what we work on every place all across the world." Meanwhile, President Trump continues to refuse to acknowledge the election result by basically claiming that Joe Biden's victory was won through voter fraud. Donald Trump is also calling on his base to pay off his re-election debts. President Trump is actively seeking donations from his supporters. Donations can be made to two different funds, Trump's personal fund and his joint fund with the RNC, the Republican National Committee. President Trump needs you to step up to make sure we have the resources to protect the integrity of the election, the wording of both funds says, which is featured in a huge pop-up on Donald Trump's re-election webpage. It continues, please contribute any amount immediately to the official election defense fund and to increase your impact by 1,000%. It is unclear who matches the donations, but if you scroll down past the information about the left-wing mob trying to undermine our election, you'll see some fine print. On Trump's personal fund, it dictates that all donations raised, only 50% will go towards a recount effort, and that 50% of each contribution, up to a maximum of $2,800, will be designated towards Donald Trump's 2020 general election account for general election debt retirement until such debt is retired. On his joint fund with the Republican National Committee, RNC, the donations work as follows. 60% of each contribution first to Save America, up to $5,000, then to Donald Trump's recount account, up to a maximum of $2,800, and 40% of each contribution to the RNC's operating account, up to a maximum of $35,500. This essentially means that depending on the size of your donation, a large portion of any donation won't go to the recount bid, but will instead go to the super PAC supporting the bid and the Republican Party. Some people have complained of being repeatedly asked to give donations to Donald Trump's re-election effort, receiving as many as 28 messages in a day.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, ignorance and its consequences. Brothers and sisters, ignorance is defined quite loosely as lacking knowledge or comprehension. We can think of ignorance as having several forms, including ignorance by unawareness, ignorance from lack of usefulness, ability ignorance, social ignorance. There are different types and levels and forms of ignorance. Ignorance is the state or fact of being ignorant. You know, it is lack of knowledge, lack of learning, lack of information, etc. The volume of what can be known exceeds an individual's capacity. And we all know that we have limited capacity, right? There's only so much we can learn. The volume of potential knowledge is even beyond the bounds of the entirety of humankind's comprehension. So if you were to just, you know, collect the comprehension of the entire humanity, knowledge exceeds those bounds. So knowledge is really unlimited. So all of us have ignorance just in different ways, right? Inevitably, we all are ignorant at some point or at some level or the other. Naturally, unintended consequences, they follow. So our ignorance at some levels, they bring in like calamities in our lives, right? The wrong decisions that we make. I cannot be a subject matter expert on everything. Although we do see some people, they try to portray as if they are an expert on everything, but that's just practically not possible, right? It's only infallibles who are at that level. But for us, normal human beings, generally speaking, we have some level of ignorance, no matter whatsoever. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we're discussing ignorance and its consequences. And we said that all of us, no matter how much information we have, no matter how much knowledge we have, no matter how much learning we have done through our lives, no matter how many books we have read, no matter how much we search internet, you know, to equip ourselves with knowledge and information, bottom line is we all are ignorant at some level. Now, this ignorance, of course, naturally brings in this discrepancy in ourselves, right? That we have to be linked to a higher level of knowledge hub, if you would. Somebody or some system that is actually providing me the processed knowledge which is taking away my ignorance and I can make the right decisions. Now, when this ignorance, you know, it adds up, with, let's say, religion. Let's start with religion. So let's start putting together equations, okay? Ignorance added up with religion, what do you end up with? It's called terrorism. Ignorance added up with power, what's the output? What's the product? It's called tyranny. Ignorance added up with freedom, the result is chaos in the society. Ignorance added up with money, you result with corruption. Ignorance added up with poverty, you end up with crime in the society. See how ignorance is the root of all evils? Ignorance is something that destroys the human society and disturbs its equilibrium. So we need to eradicate ignorance and gain knowledge to the best of our abilities so we can perform in a best possible manner in human society. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
the limelight.
The World Trade Organization had ruled that Boeing was given an unfair edge over Airbus by tax breaks from Washington State, where Boeing once had its headquarters. But after the World Trade Organization decision, the state repealed the tax breaks, making the EU's complaint obsolete in the view of US officials. UA's Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer said, "The United States is disappointed by the action taken by the European Union today," adding, "The alleged subsidy to Boeing was repealed 7 months ago. The European Union has long proclaimed its commitment to following WTO rules, but today's announcement shows they do so only when it's convenient to them." A year ago, the World Trade Organization ruled in a similar fashion in favor of the United States, allowing it to impose penalties on EU goods worth up to $7.5 billion over European support for Boeing's rival, Airbus. After Donald Trump also imposed tariffs on EU steel and aluminium and threatened punitive duties on European cars, the Europeans had hoped that he would hold fire on the tariffs related to the Airbus-Boeing dispute. But having repeatedly failed to achieve a negotiated solution, the European Union decided to announce punishment of its own. We have prepared for you an article written by Lorne Cook. The piece is titled, "EU Puts Tariffs on US, but Hopes for Change with New American Government." The article has been taken from the Associated Press website. Please stay with us for more of Lorne Cook's article. The European Union said it would impose tariffs on up to $4 billion worth of US goods and services over illegal aid for plane maker Boeing, but expressed hope that trade ties would improve once new US President Joe Biden takes office. European trade ministers agreed on the move a few weeks ago after international arbitrators gave the EU the green light for such punitive action. The World Trade Organization, WTO, had deemed illegal some US support for Boeing, which is a bitter rival to Europe's Airbus, and said the EU could make up for that with a limited amount of penalties on US trade. EU Commission Executive Vice President Valdis Dombrovskis said on Monday, 9th of November, "Regrettably, in spite of our best efforts due to the lack of progress from the US side, we can confirm that the European Union will later today exercise our rights and impose countermeasures awarded to us by the WTO." The WTO had ruled that Boeing was given an unfair edge over Airbus by tax breaks from Washington State, where Boeing once had its headquarters. But after the World Trade Organization WTO decision, the state repealed the tax breaks, making the EU's complaint obsolete in view of US officials. America's trade representative, Robert Lighthizer, said, "The United States is disappointed by the action taken by the European Union today." Lighthizer added, "The alleged subsidy to Boeing was repealed 7 months ago. The EU has long proclaimed its commitment to following WTO rules, but today's announcement shows they do so only when it's convenient to them." A year ago, the World Trade Organization ruled in a similar fashion in favor of the United States, allowing it to impose penalties on European Union goods worth up to $7.5 billion over European support for Boeing's rival, Airbus. After Donald Trump imposed tariffs on EU steel and aluminium and threatened punitive duties on European cars, The Europeans had hoped that he would hold fire on the tariffs relating to the Airbus-Boeing dispute. But having repeatedly failed to achieve a negotiated solution, the EU decided to announce punishment of its own. The EU Commission Executive Vice President Valdis Dombrovskis said, "We call on the United States to agree that both sides drop existing countermeasures with immediate effect so that we can quickly put this issue behind us." Dombrovskis declined to provide precise details of the tariffs, which were to be made public in the official EU journal in near future, but said they would hit agricultural and industrial products, amongst other sectors. Dombrovskis said, "We're not escalating anything, we're exercising our rights," he added. "The EU is mirroring the US approach in the kinds of duties it is imposing." Germany's economy minister Peter Altmaier said this step was logical and that most of the 27 EU member countries agreed with it. Asked why the European Union didn't wait until the new US President Joe Biden takes office, Altmaier said, "The US tariffs have already been valid for over a year. We won't know until about February or March exactly who in the new administration has the power to speak for this important area. So a solution had to be found now in the hope that it can prevent a further escalation." The Europeans are hopeful that the US administration's hardline trade stance will soften when next President Joe Biden takes office in January. Dombrovskis welcomed Joe Biden's purported commitment to international alliances, the multilateral system, and to improving ties with the European Union. Expressing hope for more rules-based and less conflictual transatlantic ties, the German finance minister Altmaier said most European countries see US media projected victory of Joe Biden as an opportunity for us to take a new approach to our trade relationship and to solve the trade conflicts we have with the United States. In terms of tariffs over Boeing, the European Union had earlier released a preliminary list that suggests it could go after a wide range of US products. The Europeans remained reluctant to ramp up trade tensions with Washington as the coronavirus pandemic ravages economies around the world. Some 16 million workers on both sides have jobs that are supported by transatlantic trade, the biggest such relationship in the global economy. Even before the pandemic hit, tit-for-tat tariffs over the past 4 years have affected companies and people making and selling a whole host of goods. Boeing itself said last month that it will cut 7,000 more jobs as the coronavirus smothers demand for new aircraft and pushed it to a loss. Peter Chase, a senior fellow at the German Marshall Fund think tank, says the Europeans should have waited a few months more. Peter Chase said they don't need to do this now. They don't need to disrupt trade. He said the next US president is going to have a lot of constraints and is going to have to work first on domestic issues, both the COVID-19 crisis and the economy. And he's going to have to do a lot of internal healing. And I think that they should cut him some slack, basically. Meanwhile, a top French diplomat, Foreign Minister Yves Le Drian, says the European Union and the United States would not return to the previous close relationship they enjoyed prior to Donald Trump's presidency, even with probable election of Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. France's Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian told Europe One Radio, "We will not return to the status quo ante, to the good old days of the transatlantic relationship." Le Drian added, "The world has moved on after these 4 years. Europe has emerged from its naivete, and it is beginning to assert itself as a power." However, some analysts claim a possible Joe Biden presidency is a drastic relief for European officials who have struggled to maintain good relations with Washington over the past 4 years, which sent the ties to an unprecedented low level. They say that the former Vice President, Joe Biden, has already an extensive network of contacts across Europe from his 8 years in President Barack Obama's administration. A defense analyst and advisor to the Foundation for Strategic Research in Paris, François Hisbourg, said, "Everybody knows him," he claimed. "The good news is that we will be able to have an adult relationship again with people speaking with each other rather than past each other," adding, "Joe Biden is not only an adult person, but a rather rational one." François Hisbourg said, "You have to assume things can turn around in 2024, he added. "This Republican Party had 4 million more votes than last time, with the most dysfunctional candidate you can imagine." Donald Trump has pursued somewhat hostile and inconsistent policies towards Europe during his tenure. He decided to withdraw the U.S. from the Global Paris Climate Accord, a decision that took effect recently. He also terminated the U.S. relationship with and funding to the World Health Organization, WHO, amid the coronavirus pandemic. Trump's decision to pull the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal, reached after years of negotiations between Tehran and the world powers, provoked reaction from Brussels. The Republican president also sparked controversy when he started complaining that Washington was spending too much on defending Europe and threatened to pull the United States out of NATO, the military alliance of the West security for the past 70 years. Donald Trump has once called the EU a foe, saying that they have really taken advantage of us. Such remarks prompted EU leaders, including the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, to warn that the European Union could no longer trust Washington. Brussels is well aware that some core objectives of Joe Biden's trade policy are unlikely to differ substantially from Donald Trump's. On the campaign trail, Biden promised to boost U.S. manufacturing, to strengthen rules forcing federal agencies to buy U.S. goods, and to impose extra taxes on companies looking to take their supply chains offshore. Sources of tension will persist after Inauguration Day for the next U.S. president. EU diplomats acknowledge that extensive work will be needed to solve the aircraft dispute and that potential flashpoints are looming, not least because of the determination of France and some other European Union nations to hit US tech giants with higher taxes. But the strong hope within the European Union is that under a possible Biden presidency, and if he is confirmed by legal institutions as the next US president, the Union will be treated as a partner rather than a threat, and that common cause can be found in defending the international system of rules-based trade. One EU diplomat said a return to the old normal of life before the Trump presidency is not on the cards, adding, "But at the same time, the US will remain an indispensable trade partner for the European Union. The same is true the other way round." EU officials emphasized that the bloc wants the U.S. to help save the World Trade Organization and the system it represents from terminal decline. For the moment, the World Trade Organization, WTO, does not even have a director general, with the Trump administration refusing to join other WTO members in backing Nigeria's Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala for the job. One focus of European Union ministers' discussion on Monday, 9th of November, was the cooperation in dealing with China. The EU shares US concerns about technology transfer conditions placed on companies operating in China and the advantages enjoyed by the country's state-owned enterprises. Whilst there was some joint EU-US work during Trump's tenure, notably the crafting of a trilateral position with Japan on how the WTO should tackle industrial subsidies, Brussels sees the potential to go much further. European Union officials said one promising and vital avenue for cooperation was on the protection of emerging technologies and related implications for national security. Both the European Union and the United States have grappled with security concerns around dependence on Chinese telecommunication company Huawei for fifth-generation networks, and have sought to manage their risks posed by takeovers of cutting-edge companies. There have been signals from the Biden campaign that it foresees benefits from cooperation in this area too, with campaign officials citing the need to strengthen coordination with Europe on screening of foreign investments and intelligence sharing on potential commercial threats. Dombrovskis had already been exploring with the Trump administration the idea of a European Union-United States Trade and Technology Council to manage some of this work. A related priority is to find common cause with the United States on modernizing trade rules. That would include work at the World Trade Organization on e-commerce, as well as fashioning a stable solution for companies to transfer data between the European Union and the United States. Luisa Santos, Deputy Director General at Lobby Group Business Europe, said, "The most pressing urgent issue for transatlantic trade relations was solving the Airbus-Boeing dispute, but the second was data flows. Previous European Union efforts to negotiate data-sharing agreements with the United States have withered under scrutiny from the European Court of Justice, which found violations of the bloc's strict privacy laws." Luisa Santos said, "A good balance between the data privacy and data sharing is essential for transatlantic supply chains." Dombrovskis said it was a period of extraordinary turbulence, adding, "So we need to keep our friends close and maintain those alliances that really count."
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Around the world with reporters.
On September 17, a resolution issued by the European Parliament urged EU member states to impose an arms embargo on Saudi Arabia over the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the Yemen war. The resolution also contained an arms embargo on Cairo and Ankara, motivated by concerns Europeans' arms and military equipment might be used for internal repression in Egypt and that Turkey's conduct in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea would run counter to the sovereignty of any EU member state. While some EU countries such as Germany, Finland and Denmark have adopted restrictions on the arms exports to Riyadh, Italy and other EU nations have ignored the resolution in full so far.
It's unacceptable that Egypt, a country known for human rights abuses, is the top importer of Italian weapons across the world. Saudi Arabia follows. We can't accept the countries involved in wars continue to receive our military equipment. Unfortunately, Italy hasn't done much since the EU Parliament adopted the resolution.
An Italian government report has found that the Unit for the Authorizations of Armament Materials green-lighted 57 times last year the supply of military systems, including bombs, torpedoes, rocket launchers and missiles, worth about 200 million euros to Saudi Arabia and UAE.
One in four arms sold worldwide in 2019 were produced in Europe, according to a report by CIPRI, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. France and Germany topped the list of European countries that trade in arms, while Italy came third.
We often look at the US as the main arms supplier worldwide. However, we forget that Europe also plays a major role. If the European Parliament only issues resolutions and not directives, all those countries not observing arms embargo cannot be sanctioned. Furthermore, there is a lack of political will among EU countries for change. European companies even compete with one another to sell more arms in conflicting countries.
Consecutive Italian governments have also ignored a domestic law passed in 1990 which bans the exports of weapons in countries in a state of war. Italy's arms exports stood at over 5 billion euros in 2019. Max Civili, Rome.
The United States presidential election continues to be unfinished and disputed. Democrat Joe Biden holds a slim lead, but President Donald Trump has significant public support from Republicans at the grassroots and elite levels to not concede. The election was preceded by months of controversy regarding the unprecedented use of mail-in ballots, which appeared to swing the election in the slight favor of Joe Biden at the last minute. A recent poll showed that a whopping 70% of Republicans do not believe the election was free and fair. Polls held just prior to the vote showed just half the number of Republican skeptics. Democrats say vote fraud has not yet been proven and that Trump must concede to prevent increasing distrust towards the nation's electoral process. But this is the third disputed election in the last six tries. Many are insisting that this election must be judicially vetted in order to prevent even more alienation, apathy, abstention, and anger. Others say the economic, social, and health disaster caused by the coronavirus makes this not the year to insist on transparency.
Six elections, that's my entire lifetime. So one in two of elections in my lifetime, and only I've been able to only vote in the last, I think, three of them. Or four of them. That says a lot about people's uncertainty of these elections, and that's just only going to grow if the system remains how it is.
The repeated electoral chaos is likely to undermine perpetual U.S. claims that their model of democracy is not only the best, but should be emulated around the world. Harvard ranked U.S. election integrity just 57th in the world. And that was last year.
This is not a model of a political system that would want to be mimicked. And it would only be mimicked if it's being used by the powerful. It would only be mimicked by them because they want something that undermines a majority view. And you should reject that entirely if you really are for the small d democracy. If you're really for that, you would reject the American model of electing presidents.
the corporate-dominated U.S. mainstream media appears to have a united front that Biden won the election and that any legal challenges are frivolous. A significant percentage of over 70 million Trump voters don't appear to agree. Weeks of chaos and tensions appear certain as the Electoral College, the vote which actually decides the U.S. president, doesn't meet until December 14th. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said that indirect talks between Lebanon and Israel will continue over the maritime border demarcation, stressing that this does not mean it will lead to normalization. In a televised address to mark Lebanon's Martyr Day, Sayyid Nasrallah said the talks were instead meant to be technical and set limits so Lebanon can benefit from its natural resources.
Many have written that the maritime border negotiations would pave the way for normalization between Lebanon and Israel. This is empty talk. We will never be a part of any peace talks with Israel. We consider its existence to be cancerous and devilish, and this will never change.
Sayyid Nasrallah also commented on recent Israeli drills along the Lebanese borders, calling it a demonstration of strength the resistance has established. He said such exercises proved the Israeli army was in a difficult state, where it has shifted its activities from attacking to defending. Sayyid Nasrallah made it clear in his speech that Hezbollah has strong, lifelong powers that will help it overcome any Israeli maneuver against Lebanon and guarantee victory in the region. He also made similar remarks towards the U.S. administration. Commenting on the U.S. presidential elections, Sayyid Nasrallah said he was happy at President Donald Trump's, quote, humiliating downfall. However, he said America's foreign policy will stay in favor of Israel, despite a new administration. In regards to the recent U.S. sanctions against Lebanese officials, including Gibran Basile, Sayyid Nasrallah said the U.S. is seeking to cause political chaos in the country and remove the resistance force from the region. He stressed the plan was doomed to fail.
What gives a government like the American one, which commits all sorts of terrorism and corruption, the right to label our politicians as corrupt and sanction them? We need to act upon our sovereignty and stand up against those American policies.
Sayyid Nasrallah said the U.S. has failed its many attempts to pressure the resistance and turn the Lebanese people against Hezbollah through the war in Syria and the economic crisis in Lebanon.
These sanctions will do nothing. They will not affect internal relations or cause conflict in Lebanon. The U.S. has been trying for years to cause inner rivalry. It has tried to weaken the strongest component in Lebanon, which is the resistance. This U.S. failure is a victory for the resistance and the Lebanese people.
For his part, Sayyid Nasrallah praised Lebanese officials, including Minister Basile, for their courageous stance against the U.S. pressure, saying it was for the sake of the nation. Rana Alaeddin, Beirut.
Pakistan and Iran have moved forward to expand their bilateral cooperation in major fields. During Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif's visit to Islamabad, both neighbors decided to expand their ties in the field of commerce, investment, regional connectivity, security, and people-to-people exchanges. The border management and geostrategic issues in the region linked with the security of both countries were at the center of the bilateral discussions. Iran has a long-standing concern over the back-and-forth movement of militants and smugglers at its shared porous border with Pakistan, something which also came under bilateral discussions.
We had a very good discussion on border cooperation, including border markets, as well as opening a new border crossing in Rimdan Gabit between Iran and Pakistan, which will happen hopefully within a week or two.
Pakistan and Iran also share concern over the political uncertainty revolving around Afghan peace deal after the disputed presidential elections in the United States amid allegations of electoral fraud. It remains unclear on whether or not Joe Biden will withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan by May next year under a peace deal between the current U.S. administration and Afghan Taliban
in early